I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Rebecca James. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thanks, Michael. It's great to be here.
Well, Rebecca, we're in the old customs building in the west end of Fremantle to talk about what you are in August going to be doing. But you spend your working days nearby here, do you not?
Absolutely. It's pretty fitting. I'm Senior Environmental Advisor at Fremantle Port, so our office at Cliff Street is, 20 metres away.
Are you in that beautiful architectural delight of a Port Authority building?
Absolutely, yes.
It's something else, isn't it?
It's pretty special.
And you have a view across the Indian Ocean.
Well, sadly, our division moved down to the ground floor, so I haven't quite recovered from that a few years ago. So my view, I can still see the ships across there, but they're at ground height.
Well, we'll put in a subtle little plea to be put back up high where you can see everything. But I imagine amongst the things you get to watch are, well, ships coming into port, including these big cruise ships during the season.
Yes, and it was a few years ago now that I actually started a project where I was going on board every cruise vessel that was coming into the Port of Fremantle, so I got to know them very well.
Now, in broad terms, with your official job description, environmental officer, what is the job?
Oh, so I've been at Fremantle Ports for a while now, and I think one of the reasons is it's very varied. So really lucky to be an environmental scientist that's working on marine issues as well as land-based issues. And our team gets to be involved in marine quality monitoring in out in the field, so we can get out of the office. And then we're also working on things like contaminated sites and waste management, air quality. Of course, we've got the container port here in Fremantle and two bulk sites down at Kwinana. So a really broad range of things. And in recent years, obviously, the energy transition and decarbonisation initiatives are pretty exciting as well. So a real spectrum. But I guess, in essence, I've always been a bit of a waste nerd. So I tend to be the waste specialist on site and have a real passion about what we can do.
It is interesting, the net zero objectives that the port's engaged with quite directly. Sort of a solar array has gone up on top of the old passenger terminal and things are happening. So it's quite exciting to watch. It must be a great time to be in an organisation like that.
Look, it is. It's a really fascinating space and it's moving so quickly that it is very exciting. And I think in our position as a port authority, we have the opportunity to see, even when we're not directly working on things, how we can facilitate those solutions more broadly across the port community and the supply chain.
Yes. Now, we have our shipping correspondent with us today, Jean Hudson. Jean and I have been talking about cruise ships sort of forever, and one thing that always makes me wonder is what happens to all the waste. I think to myself, these tourists climb aboard, they probably bought themselves fresh packets of toothpaste and this and that with all this cardboard waste. They throw it in the bin, they go off and have a lovely drink at the bar and a meal, and then there's all this food waste that's made in the kitchens. And you know, hesitate to mention human solid waste at the end of all of that. But have you had to sit down and try and understand how that all works? Are there national or international standards about which the ships have to comply?
Yeah, so there's very, very much international standards. So they're set by the International Maritime Organization and they're very strict in terms of what the ships can and cannot do and some of the systems that they need to have on board. So when I mentioned the project where I was visiting the cruise ships, that's where I first came across going down the back end behind the scenes, seeing the amazingly sophisticated segregation and recycling setups that are on these cruise ships. So they really have some technology that minimises the waste and has it in a way that is very clean and separated.
I've always wondered, you know, it's not even 200 years ago that Captain Stirling and his hardy bunch of first British settlers arrived just here off Fremantle. The ships in those days, I'm guessing, just threw everything overboard. What do you reckon?
Absolutely. So before there was regulations and things in place, the oceans would have just been seen as a big dumping ground.
In environmental policy, of course, there's that expression, the tragedy of the commons. It can be land, it can be water, it can be air, where people think, oh, well, it's just out there and it's for us to use and to dump anything in it that we like. But what's the state of our seas? What's the state of the Indian Ocean off Fremantle, do you think?
Oh, so, I think we're all well aware that there's a big pollution problem generally in the oceans. And this, of course, is from all sorts of sources globally around the world, and that's from the really small microplastics leading up to the bigger pieces. And, a massive issue that I think needs more focus.
Rebecca, the particular thing that has got us together today, and congratulations, is that you've just been awarded a Churchill Fellowship, and you're going to be heading off from these shores in early August. What are you going to be doing with your Churchill? Where will you be going, and what are you hoping you'll be able to come back and, in a sense, write a report about?
Yeah, sure. And I please interject, because there's some big questions. I could probably talk for hours on those. But
don't worry on either account.
I did firstly just want to acknowledge the Winston Churchill Trust. And for those listeners that aren't aware of what they do, perhaps explain what a fellowship is. So it's a wonderful organisation. So the history of it is that Winston Churchill was asked before he died how he'd like to be remembered, and he decided that he had already had enough statues and things around the world, and he'd love for a trust to be set up similar to the Rhodes Scholarship, but one that was much more readily available to all walks of life, to go and research and bring that knowledge back home. So after Winston Churchill's death, not long after his funeral, still today, was the biggest one-day fundraising door knock that's ever been held in Australia, and that raised an awful amount of money that then allowed the trust to be established. And so since that time, what the trust does is send off researchers overseas to research in their chosen field and bring back those learnings for the betterment of Australia. So it's a wonderful opportunity, and I feel really pleased to have been received one.
Well, as I say, congratulations. It's lovely that your work and your field of work is being recognised like this. And what is going to be your target inquiry?
So after seeing the wonderful systems that are on the cruise ships when they came into Fremantle, I was fairly devastated to see that all those beautiful recyclables that come off onto our berths are all sent with the other general waste off to landfill.
And what sort of things are we talking about?
So we're talking about tons of scrap metal, bulk bags of crushed glass, blocks of crushed aluminium cans, shredded plastics, paper and cardboard, and they're all very clean streams that our waste service providers would love to have over here. They look at them and say, wow, they're really great, valuable resources.
Traditionally, so, we just sent things off to landfill and buried them in the dirt.
Yes, yeah, and so there's a really good reason for that. So the reason that we're doing that over here is to make sure that we're meeting biosecurity requirements. So it's really important to make sure that any of this material that comes off doesn't contain food and other contaminants that can bring pests and diseases into Australia and affect our agriculture or environment, and this is a really important issue. So In Australia and New Zealand, I guess to date, we've gone with that idea of we need to be safe, and so everything that comes off the ships is determined to be biosecurity waste. So what my project is and what I'm doing is challenging that status quo and saying, well, biosecurity is really important. We need to make sure that we meet those requirements, but surely there's a much better way we can be doing things in today's day and age. So
what would be an obvious alternate way of handling the sort of waste you've been talking about?
So what I started doing then was working with our local biosecurity office, it's Department of Agriculture, Fishery and Forestries, so I'll call them DAF, to come on and inspect some of those recyclables as a pilot trial at Fremantle. So it was the first one in the country where we're actually having them inspect those recyclables and clear them so that they're no longer determined biosecurity waste, and we could send those off for the recyclers. So we started doing that, and then COVID hit, and then we just kicked it up again for the last cruise season with all the cruise ships back in town. And I then thought naively, wow, this is a blueprint for what the rest of Australia and New Zealand can now do.
We've got the solution.
Not so easy. After, you know, decades of treating our waste this way, our berths and logistics change, etc., aren't set up to receive it easily. So they're set up for forklifts to bring it out and put it in big skip bins. There's issues like untreated pallets, and then if the recyclables are all strapped on those, then the whole pallet can't get cleared. Mm. So it wasn't quite as easy as I thought it would be in terms of those nuts and bolts issues that we need to solve to make sure it's getting where we need it to go. So that's where I thought I actually need to go over to the other countries that are doing this and see what they do and how they do it and bring back those best practices for us to implement here. And so that's what my project will be when I'm heading overseas.
Well, it's just fantastic. Jean, have you got any idea?
No, I'm fascinated as to perhaps how many tons of waste would come off, say, one of the big cruise ships, the biggest ones that would come into Fremantle.
There's a lot, and there's different waste streams, obviously, with the recycling and with the other actual general waste, and mm-hmm. then with the sewerage and other ones. But some of the stats that are talked about are on big cruise ships. So these are the very big ones. They can be generating up to 8 tonnes of waste a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
When you say 8 tonnes, can you give our listeners some sort of volumetric thing? Is this a really big skip bin by X number of occasions?
So that figure would be including everything, including all of the oily water and the sewerage and that sort of thing. So I guess in terms of if we're just looking at my project and what we're looking at with those recyclable streams, for instance, you'd be looking at, it's the ships do it in cubic metres and the landfills do it in tonnes.
Right.
But it's hundreds of cubic metres coming off each ship, yeah.
So the equivalent of hundreds of containers that come in on the train through Fremantle over to North Quay to be put on a ship and taken somewhere, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess you can imagine it as pallet loads of recyclables, like recyclables stacked on pallets, and they're just, continually coming off the vessel.
And tell us again, in terms of your project and the recyclables that you'd like to be able to get your hands on, so to speak, what they're comprised of, what do they look like, where do they come from?
Yeah, so these are the items that when a cruise ship is sailing are being used on the vessel generally. So you can imagine with one of those huge vessels, the amount of people there all drinking their Corona, their beer cans or their plastic water bottles for those ships that have those. All of the cardboard and paper that for all of the stores and provisions that come on board. All sorts of plastic containers that are washed out as part of this. One of the good things about those streams and the local pilot that we looked at doing in Fremantle is that it shone a light on the issue, and now AMSA, so the Australian Maritime Safety Authority, and DAF are doing a joint collaborative risk assessment project nationally. So Fremantle's one of a handful of ports where they're looking to risk assess these items, and that includes the aluminium cans, plastic containers, paper, cardboard, etc., and tin, and looking at having a consistent framework in order for Australia to be able to manage that. So even before I've gone away, I think this issue is already starting now to be looked at seriously and what we can be doing in Australia.
Obviously, the engagement of the cruise ship industry is really important in this, and I imagine from other things I've read that they're doing their bit to try and make sure everything is recyclable in the first instance. What else can be done from the cruise ship industry point of view to minimise what needs to be recycled or otherwise disposed of?
Sure, yes. So from the recycling end, I think you're right. Also, it makes economic sense because these are valuable resources. Rather than paying to dump them, they can get paid for the recyclables. But it's also, it's a big social license issue for them in showing that they are and demonstrating that they're doing the right thing. I think one of the keys, and some of the lines such as Virgin have started to do this, is absolutely look at what I think you're hinting at and stop that need for this single use anyway. So the Virgin Voyages, and we had our first ones here this cruise season, they've started off with their new ships with no single use plastic. So each really simple thing. Each passenger that comes on board is given a shiny Virgin reusable water bottle rather than all day drinking out of these plastic water bottles and throwing away. And you can imagine the volumes of things like that add up really quickly when you're having thousands of passengers.
So tell us a little bit then, Rebecca, about the countries you're going to and where you think you're going to be amazed that if it's the case they're still a little bit in the dark ages and where you're expecting to be dazzled by modern practice.
Yeah, sure. Well, I have chosen countries where I'm hoping that they are showing some best practice that I can go and learn from. So I'm starting in Singapore, and then I'll be heading to England, and then off to Antwerp and Rotterdam and Copenhagen, and then over to the west coast of the US and Canada. So particularly in Europe, where I spoke about the International Maritime Organization before, or the IMO, over there the European Commission then put out a directive to support that. So what the IMO has talked about the ships needing to have in terms of recycling on board, in Europe they're required to have those same recycling facilities at their port waste reception areas. So I'll be really interested to see how that's driven change there, and in some of the other areas where they don't, see whether it's through incentivising or through fees or what it is that's worked and hasn't worked in the various jurisdictions.
So in terms of legal structures and obligations and ultimately regulation and enforcement, what happens in Australia? What happens in Fremantle? Are there state-based organisations that otherwise deal with pollution who are in charge of seeing that things are complied with, or is that, in a sense, one of your jobs?
So in Fremantle, the waste coming off shipping is, like the rest of the ports in the country, is regulated under the Biosecurity Act, so BioDAF. In terms of minimising waste or making sure that those resources are recycled, our state government has a state waste strategy to 2030 that's currently out for review. And one of the things that I've been speaking with the government departments about, and part of a submission is looking at how we can perhaps look at it from a circular economy perspective at streams like biosecurity waste and see what we could be doing about minimising and diverting those from landfill as well.
Are there, in your plan to disrupt the status quo by the research and reports you come back with, are there particular products or waste products that are more susceptible to falling under your dream proposals? Are there going to be other ones which are going to be too difficult to handle and recycle in the way you'd like?
Yes, so I think the pilot trials have shown that there's some really clear recycling streams that are fairly standard and ones that we're used to. So they're, again, you know, the paper and cardboard that don't have organic waste, so not from kitchens. The scrap metals, like the aluminium cans and the tin cans, other scrap metal that's on board, and plastics. So they're really the big ones from that point of view. But the other thing that I'm also helping facilitate is we've got two waste to energy plants that are currently under construction. So one at Kwinana and one at Rockingham. So they're the first in Australia. So one of the things, some of the places I'll be visiting overseas is these waste to energy plants where they do receive the shipping waste at them. So at the moment, these plants aren't licensed to accept biosecurity waste, and that's a key thing that I think we need to be doing with a true residual waste rather than burying it, getting that resource out and taking it to the waste to energy plants.
So those plants, when they're constructed and operating, would handle what sort of waste, what variety of waste?
So the waste to energy plants are designed to handle residual waste streams that otherwise aren't being recycled or through FOGO being composted, etc. So they're getting the last calories out of residual waste streams that have no other beneficial use, and then turning that into electricity.
And what sort of material are we talking about?
So depending on what council you're in, for example, it would be, if you're of a three bin system, you'd have your yellow lidded recyclables that would still go to recycling, your green bins that would go to the FOGO industrial composting, and then your red residual waste, instead of going to landfill, that's what the waste to energy plants will be accepting. And so for shipping waste, for example, material that wouldn't be cleared for recycling, I'm suggesting that waste to energy would be the right pathway for that in terms of a waste hierarchy.
Well, coming to the topic that one always shies away from, human waste, solid waste, what happens to that?
So that's not part of my project, I guess. I'm working on the solid and not the liquid waste, but very highly regulated again under IMO. So the systems that they have on board to treat the sewage need to be certified under certain specifications and standard, and they have really strict testing. So all of these vessels have environmental officers on board, and AMSAR for Australia will be doing checks on their like sewage treatment systems and some of their technology in terms of what they can take and then what they can turn it into and be able to having a clean discharge is really remarkable. And then other waste that then need to be discharged on land, they have liquid waste tankers that come in at every port, and that's a requirement for ports to have those available to shipping.
So every time, you know, one of these big cruise ships, and of course Fremantle doesn't get the very biggest. I can remember being in Barcelona and it seemed like a sort of cattle yard of huge cruise ships that probably took 2,000 or 3,000 each.
Mm.
And we're lucky if we get 1,000 people, I think, including the crew here in Fremantle. I'm not sure. How big do they get?
We're starting to get some larger ones now, but I'm not sure of the exact numbers. Yep.
But you've got a large number of people. So when they pull in here, and they're carrying waste from wherever mm-hmm. they've come, when they then depart the port, are they in a practical sense waste-free across all of the categories of waste? Have they discharged all of their various forms of waste here?
Generally, for cruise ships, that would usually be the case, and the main reason for that is a space issue. So, you know, they're generating that, and it's very difficult moving on if they're not getting rid of that, because with all the stores and the thousands of people, they need to offload that. So usually they're offloading waste where they can at each port. In general, for shipping, other types of shipping that produce a lot less, they will choose where they want to discharge, and often that can come down to cost.
I guess through the COVID pandemic period, where we all initially at least feared that every polished surface even might be carrying the virus and we shouldn't touch it and we needed to wash our hands very regularly, we've learnt things, or have we not? Do we have new fears for waste as a result of the COVID pandemic?
Oh, I mean, my fear is just that we generate more and more with things like the COVID. When you think COVID pandemic, if you think of all the waste that was generated as a result of
and
perhaps that thought around just that psychology coming back around some of that single use being much more hygienic.
I take your point. Outside your field of research, but not entirely unrelated to our discussion, are the famous livestock carriers that come into Fremantle, pretty much parked opposite your Port Authority building when they come in. And we had, not so long ago, the great sort of drama, an international drama in the end. I think it was the Bahija, which was meant to be going through the Red Sea to Israel. And finally, I think it got clearances and went out. But the question of livestock, cattle, sheep, and their whole treatment, is that something that is in your bailiwick, or is that entirely through the Commonwealth biosecurity controls?
In terms of...
Well, the control of... There's the animal safety aspects, isn't there, and welfare aspects. And then there's just the simple questions of all the waste.
Yeah, sure. No, yeah, quite outside, I guess, our remit and something that's looked at by other agencies,
Now, coming back to your Churchill, coming back to your desire to disrupt the status quo, what would you like the system to be looking like and operating like and being when we have this discussion again in a couple of years' time and they've acted on all of your recommendations?
Yeah, well, that's wonderful, and I do dream about such things. So first of all, I guess I'll have that biosecurity clearance process squared away, so everyone's really clear on what we can and can't recycle and that's running really smoothly. And then associated with that, and again nationally and with the WA state government, the infrastructure here is then there to support it, so that we've got nearby facilities and easy ways to get it there and for that to be processed, and some of those markets are really being developed. So now we're starting to talk about some of the exciting places that I'll be visiting as well, where they're really viewing ports as circular economy hubs, where they have all of that obviously close for things that are coming in and out and what's being processed, and then raw materials and other industries all working together as a circular economy. So I think we can really easily be in a great position to be doing some of that stuff in Western Australia.
Well, paint a picture of what that might look like on the ground. Does that mean, for example, over at North Quay, the waste you're talking about would be taken to something quite close by and processed there? Or does it mean, which some people will be wondering, whether there's going to be a bigger lineup of trucks at North Quay coming down Tideman Road to collect this stuff? How does that work?
Sure. I guess there's a couple of things. In Fremantle, we're obviously fairly land constrained. So I think some of those things are really appropriate for down at Kwinana. So down at Kwinana and also the industry that's supporting all of that makes a lot more sense to me. And also, obviously, with new ports, so we've got existing ones, and then there's also the planning for new ports. So if we're looking at planning a new container port, then we should be looking at how that's going to operate as a circular economy hub going into the future.
So the focus, because we poor land-based humans who live around the place become fixated about cruise ships, but of course the container industry is huge. The recommendation which has been being acted upon at the moment is to move the commercial container port from where it is in Fremantle right behind us south to Kwinana. What's the level of waste that you're interested in that comes from container ships and other vessels that come by?
So the container ships and the other bulk carriers, etc., the actual waste from those from shipping is very small compared to a cruise ship. So really it's just, you know, a ship's crew that's on board and the waste that they're generating. However, a port and what's going in and out of a port, not just the shipping waste, is where those opportunities are for that broader circular economy hub. So it's not just what's coming in and off the ships, but it's that whole trade opportunity there and around how we view and deal with waste, let alone the circular economy aspects, of course, of building and constructing a port itself.
I get that circular economy question you've got with the new proposal around Kwinana and Anchortel Road and new train routes and the like. You can start to deal with things, and then if you have to then further transport them, it's all connected with the hub. As I understand it, the cruise ships presently aren't proposed to go down there. There wouldn't be a direct discharge of the sorts of waste you're interested in putting into that hub at Kwinana. They'd have to be unloaded, discharged here in Fremantle, would they?
Yes, you're right. And I guess if we look at the broader Port of Fremantle, Fremantle Ports and other companies have sites down along the Kwinana Strip. So really when I'm talking about that being nearby, Kwinana very much is a part of that. So we're travelling further than that already with a lot of the waste. So that would certainly be an ideal, I think, and make sense. Industry symbiosis. Yeah.
So yes, I like that concept of, as the Fremantle Ports does, it's got the outer harbour, it's got the inner harbour, the outer, particularly taking in the whole Kwinana area, and you can put a circle around it very easily between here and there and see it as the one location. Jean?
I just have one question. I'm just curious where the landfill is. How far away is that, the landfill sites?
So there's several, but down at Rockingham is the one that is usually used from Fremantle.
Okay, and with the bio waste from ships, does that have to be dealt with completely differently? Is it buried straight away, or is there a huge process to deal with that compared with just other landfill waste from, you know, residential houses, etc.?
Yeah, good question. So under the biosecurity approved arrangements that need to be in place to be able to shift any of that waste, the transporter and the receival facility has an approved arrangement. So for instance, when it leaves Fremantle here, there's a certain route that truck is allowed to follow to get to the landfill, and then there's specific requirements. It needs to go to deep burial, so there's certain cells that are put in, so it's buried very deep, and there's 2 metres of fill that need to go on top of that as soon as it's put in, and then certain requirements about how and what is cleaned out for the truck as well.
I just love waste management. I can remember reading the Australian Institute of Engineers on waste management back in the late 70s. It's a wonderful sort of, excusing the pun in the next step, microcosm of the whole environmental sustainability question, isn't it? If you can't manage waste, what chance have we got?
Look, I agree, and I think there's not a lot of rocket science to some of the things that I'm proposing here. So I think there really is, I think there's a real opportunity for us to make a big difference. Fremantle's leading the way with this work, and if we get this right, the rest of the country and New Zealand can follow. So if you think about the magnitude of some of the tons of waste that we've been talking about and some of that resource that can be recovered, it's very worthwhile.
Now, Australia seems to take part in some sort of competition about who's got the most livable city in the world. And it depends who does these inquiries, I think, and how well they're promoted by the city wanting to go up the ladder. Perth came in recently as a very livable city. Melbourne often does very well, and Vancouver's usually around the place, and Helsinki, you know, does well like they do on everything in Finland. When it comes to waste management as a separate topic, are there league tables which put us anywhere near the top or the bottom?
Oh, look, I haven't seen such lead tables, but my own view is that we've got a very long way to go to be anywhere near the top. I mean, obviously geography's played a part of that. We've been really complacent. We've been having lots of areas where we can dig big holes and put stuff for many years. So now I think there's a recognition that that's not acceptable, and there's also a lot of value to that stuff that we're just throwing away. So I think we'll certainly be able to learn a lot from particularly the Europeans in terms of some of those innovations.
So as you head off on your Churchill in a few weeks' time, is there some shining light port or country that seems to be world's best practice?
That's what I'm going to find out, Michael. So when I come back, I'll be able to share what those kind of benchmarks are and what it is that we should be striving for.
Yeah. Oh, well. Now tell me, ultimately, for everything you want to see happen, and I've got a feeling it will happen because it, you know, just accords with common sense that you shouldn't be chucking everything in a deep hole. You should be able to work out what can be recycled and all of the benefits that flow from that. Who needs, in political terms, in power terms, to get behind this? You can have the Fremantle Ports board and CEO clamouring for these things to happen, but what is actually required in those sort of instrumental terms to make this happen?
Well, I think one of the reasons I'm so excited and I guess positive that we will be able to make the change is that in those years since I first went on and saw this, we've had great collaboration with the stakeholders, and there are a myriad of stakeholders that are involved in this. So there's the international shipping lines, and there's the stevedores, there's the agents, the waste service providers, and then there's the regulators, so the biosecurity officers, there's the port authorities, and then state governments such as Department of Water and Environmental Regulation. So I really feel that amongst the stakeholders, there's an appetite for us all to be collaborating and finding a solution here. So that groundwork that's been done in bringing everyone together and realising that, that there is something that needs to happen, I think means now that if I can bring solutions back, they'll be met very well. So hopefully, I think at the moment, we're looking at driving policy changes within DAF, so the acceptance of biosecurity waste and sending that off for recycling. But depending on what sort of models I see and kind of policy and regulatory or even finance fees and other incentives, that I might be proposing something quite different when I come back. But I really think that there's an appetite and people are going to be open to working together, and I think that's really where the magic can happen. If all those players are saying, yes, we're happy to come in and help support a solution, then you've really got a fighting chance, haven't you?
You have. And I imagine all the places you're going to, all the ports or relevant related regulators have already got their doors open and waiting for you to come and talk to them.
Yeah, well, it's been really interesting setting up all of the site visits and meetings and a lot of different organisations, so I am excited. One of the things, I guess, is, for instance, when I'm going up to Alaska, where they're quite remote and they've had some challenges with the volumes of waste up there, things like bringing back learnings from there that we'll be able to put in place for our remote ports that are then dealing with cruise ships coming in and showing how they have done it in other parts of the world and what we can do here before it comes and reaches that sort of enormous problem, I think will be really valuable.
Well, we haven't reached the stage, I don't think, in Australia yet, where we are thinking about excluding big cruise ships because they keep bringing tourists who put too much of a tax on human resources within cities, as they're doing around Europe at the moment. Can you imagine anything like that happening in this industry? That to solve problems, you try to lower the incidence of shipping and cruising?
Certainly, having been to places like Venice and Dubrovnik and seen the onslaught of those thousands, I can understand why the communities are needing to look at reducing that pressure on themselves and the environment. Certainly, the scale we're talking about is nothing like that over here, and I think the state government is really supportive about growing our cruise industry, and I think we have the opportunity to get in and make sure that that's done in a sustainable way so that we can bring that in with the benefits to the community and the tourists, but making sure that we're managing that well.
Rebecca Jones, it's been really lovely talking to you on a topic which most people wouldn't know was a topic. All of your experience at this point comes to the bear. Congratulations again on your Churchill Award, and we must talk to you when you've written your report after your tour.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.